For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with a passion-packed show talking about the things that make the beautiful game more enchanting. More enchanting even than the dulcet tones of my two co-presenters this week. Yes, two, because crammed into the studio and sitting opposite me is more Womble than Elizabeth Beresford. Literature reference.
Well,
yeah. It's more kids' TV. That's more my level. So more Womble than Elizabeth Beresford could have dreamed of. No room for Uncle Bulgaria or Orinoco, but I am pleased to say I'm joined here by former AFC Wimbledon boss and host of the Non-League Gaffer Tapes, Mr. Dave Anderson.
Good morning.
And, of course, a man who would bleed blue and yellow if you asked him. It's former player, coach, caretaker, manager at AFC Wimbledon. It's Mr. Simon Bassey.
Good morning, Tim.
Well, welcome back to the show. It's been a while, isn't it?
What I would say is, looking the same sort of shape as Uncle Bulgaria, both of us, aren't we?
Speak for yourself. I look good on radio.
looking in fine fettle, and I'm sure we'll find out more as the show progresses, but a free man since leaving AFC Wimbledon in the summer. What was that, 17 years, was it? 14 years on the coaching?
17 years as at the club from the start. 15, I think, as first team coach. So, 14, 15 years as first team coach. Yeah, so really, really long time, really enjoyable journey.
And other than giving banter back to the man alongside you, what have you been doing with your time since?
At the minute, I'm doing some recruitment work from Millwall, which is good. Keeps me busy, keeps me out at games, keeps my knowledge of players high. For the next opportunity, really.
Yeah, and is that what you've got your ear to the ground and looking for a chance to get back into the coaching staff and the management?
Yeah, I think obviously that's a real passion of mine. The coaching, the two caretaker spells I had, separated by 6 years, I think they were 5-6 years, were different. You know, the first one I was quite young, quite naive in a way. The second one, you know, really enjoyed it, really felt I got the players, even though my results were good both times, really 50% win ratio for both.
As many a manager that's retired and looking back,
I've got the
best record.
Best win ratio at Wimbledon, so I can't believe I'm unemployed. But the second one really confirmed the fact that I could do the job. So, I'm open to anything. I'm open to the coaching still, recruitment really. But a manager's job at the right level is something that would really appeal to me.
So two points there, Bas. The first one is a manager's job, and it's something that I've been banging your head off a wall about for a while. I've said to you that I feel that you're more than ready for it, which is fine. I think anybody who's been in the dressing room where you would understand that, and I mean that personally. The second one is at the right level. Now that's a thing that we might disagree on, but what is your scope with that?
I mean, I'm pretty open to any, really. I think it's more the opportunity than the level. I want to be successful. You know, I'm hard working. I've had success in a lot of in all the coaching jobs I've done from Wimbledon. So you know, they've all been successful. So the first job, I think, is really important, Dave. If you take the wrong job, you don't get a second job. Mm. So the first job for me has got to be one that you've got a chance of being successful. And that's really all I'm open for.
And that would be, I mean, to be fair, the problem with you, Bas, is you've been involved at, what, six levels? It must be.
Yeah.
Must be like from, if you go Combine Counties.
Combine Counties, Ryman South, then
Ryman Premier, Conference South, Div 2, seven levels, and being not a two-bit part of it, like a big part of it.
Yeah, you know, obviously to go through the leagues like we did at Wimbledon was fantastic, and you know, I'm sort of really proud to have played the part I did in it.
Yeah, and I'm going to hog this one again. Yes. This is an or-hogger, and this is nearly a... Listen, I want someone to give him a job quickly because I want to do the gaffer tapes with him, because I'm telling you, that would be more than an hour. But just on it, you know, off the levels, I mean, it's been a while since you've been in non-league.
Yeah,
fair to say you've been in the Football League for a while now.
Yeah, I mean, my playing career really was non-league. From 18, probably retired 25 at Castle, at Wimbledon when I really probably retired. So really, yeah, my career playing wise was non-league since I left, when I left Charlton, which was brilliant. Really enjoyed it. Met some great people. Learned a lot. Changed as a person, as you do, from boy to man.
Yeah.
But say 250 games as a coach probably in non-league, and then that's sort of the 550 plus in the Football League. So yeah, I've always kept my eye on the non-league scene because obviously we recruited from
recruitment.
There. Yeah, that was kind of our market in a way, because that was what we could afford.
And if I'm a chairman in a Conference South club looking for a manager, would that interest you? That level? Would you come down to Conference South?
Conference South, if it's the right job, it's got to be right for me. If it's a club that wants to improve and go forward, then I'd be happy to talk to anyone, really.
Yeah.
Now, I know the man alongside you asking all those questions, he's one of your biggest advocates. I think I did find a quote, Mr. Anderson, that says that Simon Bassey was the best I've ever worked with. That's quite a big statement considering the people that you have worked with.
That's absolutely the truth. It's not because he's here, and he hasn't paid me enough money to say that, believe me. And I have worked with some crackers, you know. I've been fortunate, but I think that the thing that I always remember the first time I met Bass was when I took over at Wimbledon. And I knew him from Aldershot. We didn't know each other personally, but I played against him. And Jimmy Dack, I think, might have been the link, because I knew Jimmy. And we had a chat in the bar at Aldershot. Always sticks with me. And when I went to AFC Wimbledon, one of the first days that I was at the club, it might have been the open day, I pulled Bossy and just said, talk to me about it. And he just went, boom, here's what it is, a pub team, it's this, it's that. You need to do that, you need to get rid of these, you need to... And in 10 minutes, I knew I wanted him about. But he wanted to play, and I understood that. But his knee packed up. Well, his knee packed up 6 months before he would admit it packed up, to be honest.
2 years before.
And I always remember having a chat. I was on the coach going somewhere. We were away.
Dover
in one of the games. And I just said to him, look, you know, I want you to join the staff and go in with the reserves with the late Johnny Morris, God bless him. And very, very reluctantly he did. But from that moment, it was obvious he was good as a football player, but he was going to be better as a member of staff and as a coach, and had sort of great words and great sayings, and things stuck, and wasn't scared to tell you what he thought, which... is bigger than you think. You know, you want people who you'll go into your dressing room or into your office and go, by the way, this and this, clear as a bell, you know, never a grey area. And progressed beyond that, and then I left the club, and best I've worked with, Neil Audley worked with him, Terry Brown worked with him, and the guy after Ards, I can't remember, it doesn't matter, But he sort of worked with him for a while as well. And so I wasn't the only one that thought he was okay. My biggest, my biggest gripe with Bass over the years has been he's always sat way in the background. You know, I always remember a story, and I know it's about Simon, and we'll come back to him in a minute, but I'll leave you with this one. This is typical Bass. There was another manager who we know well, and I'm not going to name him, and there was a talk of Wimbledon sending a player from the club, and the manager used Bassey's name in the disagreement about the fee or whatever it was, and Bassey read it in the paper and went absolutely ballistic, because he always thought his job was to be way in the background. So what happens with that is everybody within the game and within the dressing room knows how good he is, but nobody else knows who he is. And now it's time for him to, which he'll find difficult, but it's time for him to come out and do it. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah. As I say, I was always...
Do you know the players, or the managers talked about as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't forget things. You know, yeah, I've always, I worked hard. I loved Wimbledon, was a Wimbledon fan as a kid. So for me, it was fantastic when Dave put the ultimatum to me to retire or leave, basically. You know, Wimbledon was my team. So, you know, it was something I reluctantly done, but I didn't never want to leave Wimbledon. So it was... it was an easier decision than I made Dave think. I just still, I still tell him he retired me too soon. Yeah, but no, it was it worked away. I wasn't one to take, get out in the front and take praise. As I say, just saying earlier, my dad always used to say, self praise is no praise. So, you know, I used to get my head down and work and say the role I done took a lot of time. So I would rather do that than publicise myself.
And just on that, you know, the one club thing, you need time to get over that, and I suppose you've had time to get over that now. But so that's part one, you know, and part two is how will it be being in a different club? Because the next club will be a different one.
Yeah. I don't know. I think football clubs are football clubs. Obviously, my affiliation at Wimbledon, my love for the place won't go away. But anyone you spoke about manager I've worked for, they'll tell you how hardworking I am and you know, how thorough I am. So I'll do that for Simon Bassey. So the best Simon Bassey can be is for whatever club he gets.
We often see, you know, managers come in, they bring their own staff in, and as Dave's already touched upon, it says so much about yourself. And your knowledge of the game, that, you know, those other managers came in, kept you there, and you were not just, you know, sometimes the staff get kept on, but they effectively become a second kit man. You know, they're there or thereabouts, but you've been actively hands on there. And we often talk about the making of a manager is the people that they've worked under and alongside. What sort of attributes would you say that as a manager you've taken from Dave, from Terry, and what are the strengths do you think you can now bring to that package?
Yeah. I mean, honesty, first of all. I mean, I think it's really important for to be honest. You know, if you want to create about environments, you speak about environments. If you've got a dishonest environment, it's not good. So really hard working, really honest, really fair. You know, I'm not one who isn't fair to people. I give everyone the fair chance. Tactically, very switched on, and obviously player wise, a good knowledge of players.
Yeah, switched on, massively switched on technically, but very clear cut. You know, I've worked with people who are always hedging their bets. You know, well, you know, it could be this, but it could be that. And as a manager, you don't want that. You know, you want someone to go, here's what I think. And if you're wrong, listen, we're all wrong from time to time. But Bassey would be like clinical in his thought. He'd go, look, here's who they are, here's what they are, here's...
I remember Dave's, one of his first things he spoke to me about when he talked about going on these staff was, I want you to tell me what you think. And I thought, well, we've got no problem with that. He said, because he knows what he thinks. He wants to know what I think. So from then on, every game I watched, I've always watched as if I was the manager. If I was a manager, this is what I'd do. This is why I'd do it. These are the consequences that I might face. And this is how I'll handle them. As long as you can go and give your opinion with them thoughts in mind, I don't think you've ever got a problem. And I always looked at them four things and said, this is it. This is why. This could happen because of it. But this is how I deal with that. And, you know, I think Dave really, really welcomed that to him.
Yeah, and I think with that, when you're that clear in your own head and you put that opinion off over in a dressing room or to a manager, dressing rooms are the same. Players want clarity. They sometimes you need to give them clarity because they'll look to hide behind stuff. They'll look to, well, you know, if you say this and that. So I've always thought in a successful dressing room, it's clear as a bell. There's no smoke in there. There's no grey areas. And you get it right, listen, we're fortunate. We've got it right more than we've got it wrong. But I think that having that clarity, but you have to have the knowledge of the situation, of the people involved in the situation, of how to fix the situation. If you ain't got that knowledge, that's when you want to sit on the fence because you're not sure, you know. And he's never ever suffered from that, to the point where sometimes you're going, you know. And when I say we debate stuff, and I think that's the healthiest place, believe me, he can proper debate. And I think that that's why. And I think the other thing is, when you go into management and you get your own staff, you'll want that off them, won't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, no one knows everything, and it's always a different angle on it. And, you know, you might still stick with your decision, but understand there's a different, you know, that might awaken you to a different side. And I think really important, when you say, Dave's talking about dressing rooms, is that people hear you. You can have all the ideas, all the great ideas, and they can be spot on. If you can't communicate with people, if you don't get people don't get you, that connection, it's difficult. And I think I read an article once about first-time managers thinking, will they hear my voice? And that's important. When you talk, that people hear it, not through their ears,
yeah,
in their mind and in their soul. And I think if you can get that, you've got a real good chance.
So to our first telephone guest, his side is the surprise package many are talking about this season in the National League, but that's not a surprise to him. 10th last season in the National League, they top the table at present and entertain fellow early pace setters Bromley this weekend in the big TV game. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show. Manager at Barrow AFC, Ian Everett.
How are we doing, guys?
It's good, mate. And I know it's a busy morning there for you. You've got this big match ahead this weekend. I say there was no surprise to you for the form, because I've always been impressed that even last term in your belief that the club was heading in the right direction and that you could achieve even in what is one of the most competitive national leagues that we've seen for years. You're top now, 3 points clear, 2 games in hand, everything as expected?
Yes, for me. Now, people might find, like you said, be surprised at that. I'm not. Last season, I thought we underachieved, really. I was new to it all. I had to recruit a whole new squad of players. I inherited a club which the mindset and mentality was all wrong. They were just happy to survive. They had a completely different style and identity to what I wanted to play. So it was a huge rebuild job. We recruited well last year. We improved as the season went on. And we didn't quite hit those playoff spots, and I thought we should have, and that was probably down to a lack of goals. So we realised pretty quickly what we needed to recruit this summer. We had our business done by May, with pre-season, in terms of the whole squad was together. We worked tirelessly on things. We didn't start the season well, but there were great signs in terms of the way we were dominating games and just making silly mistakes in both boxes, really. That changed against Aldershot in September, and then since then we haven't looked back.
Yeah, you are up there, but obviously that comes with extra pressures. How are you able to cope with that, being top and everybody's looking to catch you?
I'm enjoying it, you know. I think we're all embracing it. I think, like I said, the biggest thing that we've changed is our mentality and getting the lads to believe that we're the best and we're good, and they do that now. Now, people have said from the minute we hit the top spot that we'll end up falling away. We've now been top for 2 months, and we are getting better. The thing for me was we could still improve, and I think we're showing that we are improving. I mean, the last two Saturdays have been excellent. We've won 7-0, which is a great achievement, and as you all know, it's difficult to beat teams by that many goals, but we're getting that ruthless clinical edge in the final third. We have so many entries into the final third, the way we play. We just need to make that right decision at the end, whether it's a shot, pass, cross or a dribble, and we're starting to get that right now. And once we do, like I said, I think there's improvement to come, and hopefully we can stay where we are.
Hi, and I'm interested in what you've said about the belief, because whatever coaching badge you do, it doesn't really come on the agenda. How do you actually implement that into your team?
Well, you have to have that belief yourself, and it starts with me. You know, as you know, as a manager, you are the front and face of it all. And if you don't believe in it, then other people won't. So I turn that around. I played for a manager in Ian Holloway, where my Blackpool team were just happy to survive relegation in the Championship. He came in, changed our mentality. At the end of that season, we were in the Premier League. And that's what can happen. And we've worked hard every day with players' confidence levels, the beliefs, and on the mental side of the game in terms of believing what we do, believing how good they are. And then when results start to come, that only, you know, makes confidence grow even more. So now, you know, the lads are believing going into Saturdays every week in our way of playing, and believing they're the best team in the league. And at the moment, we're showing that we are.
Yeah, you're obviously achieving on the field. You're up there, but it also seems that since you've arrived there at Barrow, it seems to be coming together off the field as well.
Again, it was a huge rebuild. You know, this is my first job as a manager, and the connect we train in Manchester, so the connection between supporters and the football club was distant in many ways, logistically. And you know, when we were up there, they weren't really backing us with their support. We've had to do a lot of work off the field in terms of getting around schools, hospitals, selling the club's brand again. Not only that, we've changed our identity in terms of the way we play. Under Paul Cox, we were very direct. We now played, you know, right through the thirds, play attractive, expansive, attacking football. And we had to re-educate the supporters into that at first. There was grumbles from the stands, get it forward, get it in the box, etc. But now they understand why we're patient, why we're trying to build with possession. And everyone seems to be enjoying it. And again, it comes down to mentality. I think they're starting to believe in what I've been saying all along, what the players have been saying, and when we're backing up results, it helps everybody. And the town of Barrow is completely changed. You know, I was walking through the streets last year, everyone seemed miserable. Now the first thing they want to do is smile and talk about football, and that's a huge achievement.
That's it. And to be fair, Ian, on more than one front, I always, worry's the wrong word, but when you get after Christmas and you're still in the trophy and you're top of the league, and I'm sort of guessing how you're going to answer this, but does it start to get in the way, the FA Trophy?
Yes and no.
I didn't guess that.
I mean, obviously the extra fixtures aren't ideal, and because we've had a number of games called off already, obviously we've already got two games in hand in the league, and there's going to be other fixtures rearranged. But we have, you know, a group of probably 18 to 19 players which I really believe in, and we work tirelessly hard on the training ground, so everyone knows their jobs, their roles in the system and the shape. And when they all get in the team, I trust them to perform to the level I expect. You know, we don't carry big numbers, but what we do carry is quality. So we will, you know, at times have to rotate 2-3 positions, but yeah, we're ever so fit. You know, we train intensely, we train hard, we do a lot in the gym. So fitness levels for us are important. And in this league, I think that's where we gain an advantage with, you know, the transition of out of possession in possession. We work hard in possession to keep the ball, but as soon as we give it away, we hunt in packs, we press with pace and intensity, win the ball back and create problems. Hopefully we can carry on. You know, winning is a habit, as you all know.
Yeah.
And if we can keep that winning momentum going throughout the trophy and the league, hopefully come the end of the season, you know, we can create some history.
And just, you know, a little bit on the game on Saturday, it won't make or break your season, but they are... they're big moments, aren't they, when you play against the side that's up around you?
Huge. There's no denying it. There's no saying that, you know, there's a long way to go and there's more games to play. These sort of games do define seasons, and we need to make sure that we perform to the levels that we have done of late. If we do that, then I'm confident we can get the right result. Look, I think Bromley need to win more than we do. Having said that, we need to keep on our momentum, keep playing well. And every week that goes by and the other teams see Barrow have won again, it just puts another nail in that coffin, you know, and that's what we want, to keep ticking results off game by game, concentrating on the next one in front of us. And Saturday's a big fixture, but hopefully we can go out there and get the 3 points.
Sure. And just on the longer term, Ian, about, you said the squad's 18, 19 strong. Will you look to add that? Because I always feel that, you know, an element of anybody being successful, you need to be lucky with injuries and suspensions at particular times. As you get into the last sort of third of the season, is 18 or 19 enough, or will you add to it?
Obviously, that's a vital part of the game, injuries and suspension. I think, you know, the biggest thing for me, people, I think just ourselves and Chorley are the only two clubs in our division that haven't signed players in January. I don't really understand that, given that we're not governed by a transfer window. So we have that option. The biggest thing for me was to keep hold of the ones we've got in this window, and it looks like we've done that. The two lads from Blackburn we've got on loan that are both fantastic players, we've managed to extend till the end of the season. And look, if we get injuries along the way or suspensions, we can look to, there's funds available to bring in. But I'm very picky recruitment-wise. And at the moment, the way we're playing and the way we're going, it's hard to improve what I've got for the budget that's available. And, you know, we won't take financial risks. We won't gamble. But if something happens to one of our better players, one of our goal scorers, for instance, then we will have to bring someone in. But fingers crossed we can keep them healthy in one piece for the rest of the season.
Yeah, you know, I'm hogging it a wee bit now, but I have to follow up on that because Simon Bassey is beside me, who was massive in the recruitment at AFC Wimbledon through the years. And it's a big, big thing. You know, you can be the best manager in the world, but if you recruit the wrong players, you're in trouble.
100%. I think for me, it's the most important part of football. I think recruitment and mentality are two things that are hugely underestimated. As I said before, I touched on it, that we identified last season what we needed for this season and how we could improve. And that's why we took the club out of the comfort zone and offered people like Scott Quigley 3 years in May just to stave off competition, really. We knew what Scott would add to us. We probably can't pay what other clubs can pay, but what we can do is offer security. And sometimes players go for that. So we managed to get that one done over the line, and it's come up trumps with him scoring 17 goals so far this season.
And you've obviously come into the role, your first proper management role, and you've taken to it immediately. But
yeah, he's doing all right, isn't he?
Yeah. We often talk about, you know, managers coming in and what's their knowledge of the non-league game and that. You've played at the highest level. I think you have an ever-present season when you're at Blackpool in the Premier League. So you're used to players that can do everything and a bit more, and you're having to recruit on a budget, recruit to players that are going to play in this level. How have you found that? Has that been an easy thing? You've understood what the level was, and you've just recruited players that you know have got the right attitude to play in non-league level?
Again, I think it's a mixture. The lucky thing for me was I played and captained at more or less every level, the Premier League down to League Two. And because I only retired 2 years ago, you kind of learn how to deal with the youth of today. Now that's difficult.
Send us that script, will you?
Yeah, but the young lads now, as you know, they're a different breed and mentality to what I was when I was coming through at Derby at 18, 19, 20. You're treated differently. They respond to criticism differently, and you have to really, you know, learn how to deal with that. I managed to do that as a player, and I've took that into management now. There's no secret. It's hard work, you know. The missus won't thank me for it, but yeah. I'm tirelessly watching games. I'm doing my research on players, not just their technical attributes, but also their mentality, how they are as characters. And it's important that they all buy into what we're trying to do. As I said, we spend a lot of time on looking at players and recruitment, opposition analysis, and it looks to be paying off at the moment. You know, it's football for my players as well. It's not just while you're in at the training ground or on a match day. It's a 24/7 business. You know, as a player, you need to go home, make sure you're fueling your body correctly, get the right rest, recovery. And as a manager, when you go home, you need to look at the next game. You know, what players we need, where we need to strengthen, etc., etc. It's hard work, but hopefully that will pay off with the future. You know, hopefully I can move through the levels and have a good career as a manager, and this will stand me in good stead for that.
And talking about that, I mean, is that staying with Barrow? How's, you know, we all know Barrow have had issues in the past. You're training again in Manchester at the moment. It's difficult to recruit players. I know you've got your midweek game organised for February to Dover. I mean, that's never an enticing one to bring the players in, is it? A trip down to Dover from where you guys are. Is the club set up to move up to the next level into the Football League?
Yes, we are. Obviously, training in Manchester is difficult in terms of being away from the club, but recruitment-wise, it's perfect for what we can pay. It's that simple. And the facility we use at Hopwood Hall in Rochdale, the college, is fantastic. We've got everything we need there, 3G, football pitches, gyms. It's where Toronto Wolfpack, the rugby league team, are training as well. So it's a top facility. Look, in terms of myself, I want to get Barrow promoted. That's my goal. That's what I set out to do. And I genuinely think that if we can get promoted, the squad I have, with two or three additions, we can replicate that in League Two. Look, as in the future, I want to manage at the highest level possible, and I'll be working to do that. But for now, my job is here. I love what I'm doing, and hopefully we can get ourselves over the line.
And that all starts with Saturday. We better go and let you get out to training and get those lads organised. But we thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show and wish you well for the rest of the season.
Yeah, good luck, Ian.
No, thanks, guys. Thanks very much. A pleasure to speak to you. Thank you.
Chaps, a very young manager. That's his his first proper job in management. He had I think three games at Chesterfield as they were coming down out of the Football League. So I didn't get to ask him about what he thinks of what's going on there. But we often talk about having experience to manage at non-league. He hasn't really got even knowledge of playing at non-league, but he seems to have adapted to it very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, say football's the same game, whether it's Football League or non-league. Say Ian alluded to, the mentality is really important, and he's managed to go in there and turn that round, which is massive for him. And being given the time to do that is fantastic. I'm sure he changed a lot of players in his recruitment, as he's saying, recruitment's huge. The turnover of players, which
is
great.
Sorry, just on it is massive, Bossy, isn't it? Bossy, it's
yeah. I mean, you could be the best coach in the world, but you know, if the players aren't good enough or capable of implementing your ideas, you're no good.
You don't need to look at me, just speaking to the mic. I'm fed up looking at you. But listen, no, and I want to make the point because Bass was massively involved in all recruitment at Wimbledon. You know, probably 70-80% of players that walked in the door were through his knowledge and recommendation. But it is. Hard working. It's
a thankless task. It's one of the jobs that you do. At Wimbledon, we was unfortunate because we had a fairly small budget, so everything we had we put into the first team. So we never paid anyone as a recruitment department. It was kind of me and two part-time scouts really. In the end, when we got to League One in the conference, it was just me. So yeah, it's difficult, but obviously a lot of hard work, a lot of unseen work behind the scenes, and a lot of hours.
Is that just pure legwork? You're on the phone, you're looking for tips from other people, but you're getting to games, you're watching videos. It's just,
yeah, I think it's some videos. I watch a lot of the opposition on videos because you can't physically get to games. But in terms of players, you'd watch on the Y Scout or Scout 7, whatever app you had. You get a feel for them, but you always have to go live. You know, there's such a difference when you watch.
Ian's talking about attitude of players.
Yeah.
And you can't see that off a video, can you? You can't.
He's watching through a letterbox, I always say. if you watch it on the computer, that's exactly it.
Used to be arrested for things like that.
yeah. But that comes down to contacts and stuff as well. Because it's one thing seeing a good player, but knowing his characters, the difficult part in it, you've got to try and... Your contacts come in then, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ian's alluded to the fact he's worked as a player from Premier League to League Two, so his knowledge of contacts of people would be huge. So he's got a good network there to go and tap into. It's always friends or people you know in the game, and that's the main thing, you have to trust them to get good opinions, but... You know, it's hard to find out the ins and outs of people, but you know, there's a lot of good phone calls you can make to find little bits, to find a detail out, really.
And knowing your knowledge of players, this is something that that seems to have come up talking to managers this year. We've always said, you know, players that go up through the levels with their club or they'll play at different levels. Whereas this year, it seems to be people are suggesting that the levels are that different that you need a different sort of player at every level at the moment. So it's more difficult to make that step and progress up. Yeah,
I don't know. I think if you get, I mean, players can be average players in good teams and be good players, you know. It's keeping, if Ian's lucky enough to take Barrow into the Football League, to keep that together is hard. I mean, we had it at Wimbledon, we got promoted, lost our two best players. Difficult to replace, you know, and that was always, every year we kind of done that when we got promoted from League Two to League One. Same happened. So you have to recruit constantly and improve. And if you financially can't afford to keep players, it's really difficult. So you have to pre-plan massively, but hard to do, say, when you're such a tight budget.
So, for the fans, by the fans, that's our tagline. And with an AFC Wimbledon loving in the studio, let's continue the embracing of the fan-owned model. This weekend, weather permitting, the original fan-owned club will play their 1,000th competitive game. That's 18 and a half years since formation. Many more clubs have been founded or moved to the fan-owned model on the back of Enfield Town's success, and football has changed for the better. So Saturday's A10 derby with Cheshunt is something of a milestone. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Chairman of Enfield Town, Paul Reid.
Good morning.
Morning, Paul. Now, for those that don't know or maybe don't remember, 18 and a half years, it's quite a while. Can you give us a brief rundown as to how the club came about and was formed in June 2001?
Yeah, of course. So the previous Enfield Football Club were very successful and won FA trophies, won conferences, full fans of the FA Cups, and had a really sort of big success story during the 80s. And then things sort of deteriorated a little bit, relegation from the conference, a change of owner who initially came in, did well, spent some money, but eventually sold the ground, took the money, and disappeared, really. The club was leading a nomadic existence. We were playing at Boreham Wood, St Albans, and supporters got together, really, I suppose, in the first instance, formed like a pressure group, I suppose, for want of a better word. And then we eventually tried to have negotiations with the chairman at the time. It didn't work out. We nailed on one deal too many, and eventually we sort of put it to the supporters and said, look, why don't we vote to start again? We're all in it because Enfield's our town. It's the club we want to support. We've got an opportunity maybe to start again at the lowest level and give people back what they were supporting their team for. We didn't quite expect, I don't think, the response we got, and pretty much 95% of the people that were in this pressure group at the time said, yep, do it. So I think we had 500 members at the time. That was towards sort of the start of 2001. And then had to get a side together first to start the season, sort of the 2001-2 season. So basically had no team, no manager, no board at the time, nothing. So threw all that together at very, very short notice and started the season in the Essex Senior League.
And the rest is very much history. I mean, obviously, the club's in your blood. I know, you know, Dave and myself know your dad, Roger, very well, very influential in the setup of the club, and now the president. But yourself, I mean, you're like most chairmen in non-league. You've had plenty of roles, but before you've got the top job, which is not always the job that everybody wants.
No, I mean, going back to the old club, I used to sell programmes when I was about 10, yeah. Outside of grad, so I've pretty much done everything through that club and then into Enfield Town now. So, I mean, at the start, I think it's a different sort of club. We're all in it together, and yeah, there's a chairman, but it's, you don't potentially have the same say as other chairmen do, people that put all their money in and have the final say. It's very much a democracy, which has its strengths, but equally can be a challenge sometimes, and everyone wanting their say, and maybe getting things done is sometimes takes a little bit longer than it might do at other clubs.
Yeah, and I often talk about, you know, Hollywood should be looking at non-league for these stories, and yeah, I know the guys opposite me with their involvement with AFC Wimbledon. There's always talks of stories there, but you were the original inspiration behind those Wimbledon fans building AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah, and I think there's some credit to that. It needs to go to Supporters Direct as well. So I think when we were looking for a model to set up, Brian Lomax, who was a fantastic man, who's unfortunately no longer with us, who was involved at Supporters Direct, had sort of built this model, and we went along and trailed it for him, really, I suppose. And it became the same model that Wimbledon used. So, yeah, we were the trailblazers, and I suppose the first ones to take the plunge, but Supporters Direct do need some credit for that as well.
And obviously, Mr. Anderson as well. I mean, Enfield was one of your early management ventures in the old form.
No, I went there with George Borg from Harrow, I think. It's a long, long time ago. But I remember it being a big club. I remember sort of when you walked in the door, it was a big club, big field, big crowd, big expectations. Good experience for me, you know, to sort of feel that. And I actually remember, oddly enough, Paul, I think when I was manager at Hendon, we opened the ground at Brimsden. I remember playing in a pre-season game at Brimsden.
We played. We played a couple. I remember we played. It didn't play on the main pitch. We played on a park outside the back. It's quite a funny story actually, because we had to delay the kickoff, I think, because we had too many people trying to get in. And then I think this might have been the second game actually.
Might have been
played the game. But I remember the first one. We'd done everything. We'd got a team together. We'd got a ground. We'd entered the league. And then just before kickoff, the ref goes, right, where's the match balls and corner flags? And we'd forgotten that sort of stuff.
But so, and obviously your dad I've known for a long time, and I've sort of seen over the years with our club, I'm at visiting you at Brimsden and then at the ground, your new ground where you are now. But it's just one of them stories that doesn't often, you know, Wealdstone have now got themselves back to where they need to be. And I always worried about Enfield that, you know, in that period, if it was in the wrong hands, it would have disappeared, you know. And the fact that they made it a supporters owned and sort of trusted themselves is something that always sort of stuck with me. It's always a club I've sort of had a little, you know, I've enjoyed going there, and I've always felt an association with them, Tim, you know.
Yeah, no, and that's great, and I think there's an affinity even with Wealdstone, who were big rivals of the old Enfield, the clubs that have found themselves in the same situation. And I think the same as Wimbledon, to a certain extent. I don't think when we took it over, it wasn't necessarily the history we were trying to save. I think it's the sort of the soul and the culture of the club that you try and replicate moving forward.
And I think that says so much about the people that made that move, because it was a big drop, wasn't it? You say you went down to the lowest level. You were at Essex Senior League. I think, what was it, a four level gap from where Enfield were playing at the time. And that's you get fans in tears at the end of the season when they get relegated one step, but you're automatically making that big step, which shows how much you love your club and your football, I guess.
Yeah, and unlike others since, I think it's more important to have your club back than be playing at a certain level. Yes, we all aspire to be playing at the highest level we can, but that first couple of seasons, I'm sure Dave at Wimbledon had the same thing. It's massively enjoyable because you've got your club back and you go to places that you've probably never been to before as a football supporter. I think the first season we had a big run in the Cherry Red Records Cup because we couldn't enter the bars. Yeah. And we went to some amazing grounds, Netherham Village and Stony Stratford Town, where we took 300-400 supporters. They've never seen anything like it. It's just a great cup run and some fantastic times.
You're right, Paul. I mean, the one feel I got at Wimbledon that I didn't get anywhere else was that you actually knew that they owned the club, the supporters, that there was a different feel. It's a very difficult thing to describe or put on paper, and Basil know it more than me, but there is a different feel about a supporters-owned club. You know, you can feel it in their bones that it's they know they own it, and that their love of it's bigger, their want of it's bigger. It's, you know, I always found it a sort of strange thing to describe, but something that I always could identify.
I think it's funny, you know, Wimbledon, for example, they went from buying John Artson for $7.5 million to 3 years later, they was in the Combined Counties League.
Saying I'm Simon Bassey.
Simon Bassey with one, you know, with one knee, you know. But they absolutely loved it because they felt part of it. You know, that was it was their club, as you say. The interaction with the players was huge because the players were just, you know, unbelievably lucky to be playing in front of 2,500 people in the Combine Counties in Wimbledon's case, you know. So I think it's the buy-in from the fans is huge, and if you can get that, then it's a real powerful force.
Definitely. I think it's keeping that momentum going as well, because I think when clubs do it, and maybe Wimbledon's seen it now with a sort of their troubles with the ground, etc., after a while supporters see you as a just another club, particularly new people maybe that weren't involved. We've got supporters, a lot of supporters now that weren't even born when we made the switch. So I think you do need to tap into that enthusiasm in the first few years and build as much momentum as you can.
Absolutely. I mean, we stayed in the Ryman Premier League. We lost with Dave as manager. May I add, it was his fault. We lost two playoff finals in the Ryman Premier League, and there was a real sense of, wow, if we didn't get out the next year, there was a real, I felt it was massive that the fans, you were just about to lose patience with it. You know, they hated being in the Ryman Premier in the end. And then the relief to get out of it was still one of the greatest achievements that Wimbledon made, I think.
And you talk about momentum, Paul, because you're about to make your 1,000th competitive game, but everything else seems to be going really well. You had your new 99-year lease a few seasons ago. Yeah, I know that the youth setup is something that you're all very proud of, and new academy going forward this year as well. I mean, how far can the club go? You are in the old Ryman Premier, Isthmian Premier now, and you know, in and around the playoffs. Can the club make it up through the levels?
That's a good question. I think we haven't quite got the fan base that Wimbledon had to do that. So I think unless we're going to invest in our youth and academy and start growing our own players, we probably can't compete even at the level we're at with some of the bigger clubs in terms of wages. I think we've got a chance of getting out of this league at the moment, and I think we've probably got a chance of staying in Conference South if we're successful. But I think in terms of progressing out of Conference South onwards, I think you need either a bigger investment or a really, really good sort of academy where you can grow your own players, because we won't be able to generate enough money off our own accord to pay the sort of wages that the players at the top of those leagues are getting paid.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's a Conference South club, and I don't want to put any more pressure on Andy Lees, because I know what management's like and the pressure it's put on you, but it's definitely a Conference South club, and I think you're right. Get there, get your foundations there, and then see what happens next. But I do think that you should be striving for that, Paul, absolutely.
Yeah, and you've got to look at some examples. You look at maybe smaller clubs that have got out of, I know they're back in our league now, but Eastbourne did it for 3 or 4 years. You look at Boreham Wood, really, as probably are the best examples of a club with a limited fan base that have been on scale and achieved really good things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, obviously, you had the recent move of your striker Mo Fowle to Bolton Wanderers recently. A great move, always a great move for the player. But what about as a chairman when you've got this guy that's banging in goals week in, week out, and then he's gone?
Yeah, Mo was great. I mean, we tried to get Mo on a contract, as obviously you would, when you know there's interest in him, and clearly it wasn't in his best interest to do so. But he was very, very honest with me. He promised that he wouldn't go to January. He promised that he wouldn't go to another non-league club, despite there being lots of interest. And he was good to his word. We said that we could put him in the shop window, which we did, and we were good to our word. So it was very amicable. Obviously, we'd have loved a bit of money for him, and it's a massive hole to fill in terms of the goals. But the relationship with Mo was a great one, really.
And has Bolton promised you anything if he does anything?
I got less money than us, Dave.
It's a fair point. Fair point.
Yeah. No, they've not, in honest. So they've been good, but they're embargoed that they can't actually offer anything in terms of transfer fees anyway, so even the settlement or anything like that.
Yeah.
I know it's a good excuse, but I think it's a genuine one that they're not allowed to do anything like that at the moment. But I think, yes, if Mo goes on and does well, I think they'd be open to a settlement further down the line and potentially a friendly.
And at least it puts you guys in the shop window as well, doesn't it? When you're trying to recruit players, you know, that you've not stood in anybody's way. That, you know, there's an opportunity to be spotted and move on.
Of course, and Josh Davidson, who was playing up front with Mo last season, is now in Charlton's first team and scoring goals there. So Corey Whiteley went on and did well. So I think if there's a lot of talent in North London, and if players are getting released from pro clubs and want an opportunity to showcase their talents, move on, then I think we've shown it's a good place to play the football.
Yeah. So this Saturday, then, your 1,000th competitive match. It's great that it's a local derby. Just a shame it's not at home.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, you can never plan it, I suppose, with League Cup games and postponements and stuff, how it's going to fall out. But it couldn't be that much closer to home, to be honest. Just the A10L Classico is always a always a good game. Always very competitive. I'm sure Craig will make it very competitive. That's for sure.
Yeah, I would bet money on that.
Yeah, and I think it's no further than most of our supporters have travelled anyway. Yes, it would be nice to be at home and be able to do something around that. But it's going to be a really, really tough game. Chesnut on a good run of form. They need the points at one end, we need the points at the other end. So it would be a good local derby.
Yeah, well, Paul, congratulations on making this milestone. And thank you from the world of football for everything that everybody's done there.
Yeah, no, I just want to send my regards to his father. Tell Roger I said hello, Paul, please.
I will do indeed. Thanks for having us on, chap.
Chaps, it is a story, and I know it's the film director in me, budding film director. Well, one of these stories will make. We had the Bromley boys, didn't we? Last season, the fact that you've got 500 people that are supporters of a big non-league club that then take that drop just because they want their club to run properly and in the right, and then they've got back up to near enough that same level, and they're thriving. They are thriving off the pitch. And yeah, I touched upon the youth teams and that sort of thing, but it's a proper club.
Yeah, and I think what's amazing as well, just as luck would have it, is the ground they play in now is just the other side of the park of where the original Anfield ground was. Big park in the middle, it's now. And so they're right where they need to be. I remember the time when the owner came in and run the thing into the ground, really, for want of a better description, and the sort of pain it caused people at that time. But they reacted in the right way, and nobody will ever do that to them again because it's their club. But big club on a bash. You must have played against them.
Yeah, I think I was 18 when I first played against them, and Andy Kerr was playing, Steve Terry was playing, some ex-pros.
Pete Taylor there then? Peter Taylor?
No, Peter Taylor went there. And I played, it was early season, Billy Goldstone. You remember?
Yeah, Billy Goldstone.
Billy Goldstone was playing centre midfield. And I was a young boy, just come out of Charlton. I walked out and Billy wasn't the fittest guy in the world. And I thought, I'm in for an easy day here. Never touched the ball. I never touched the ball for 90 minutes. He sat in midfield, pinged it everywhere and never got near him. Walked off thinking, need a bit of work.
Good to do, yeah. Yeah. Good to do.
Yeah, but I know it was a really strong side. You know, yeah. I later played at Carr Shorten under Tony Jennings, who was a Enfield Town legend, real tough man and a good coach. So they had some real history in the game.
So time to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers and round off the show, and welcome back to the Non-League Show. It's senior writer at the Non-League Paper, Mr. David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Hey, good. It's been quite a quiet week in the non-league world. The weather playing a little bit havoc with the calendar, but we did have the FA Trophy, FA Vars games at the weekend, those that took place, and then the draw on Monday as well.
Yeah, quite a quiet sort of week news-wise. Probably not a quiet one for groundsmen, sort of up and down the country trying to prepare games, midweek games, and of course Saturday's fixtures. But yeah, for us, a little bit quiet. Sort of been looking at sort of the fallout from the Trophy and Vars rounds last weekend, which was quite a interesting and entertaining weekend all round, really. And then on Tuesday night, just sort of looking at Dorking's great win at Stockport. I spoke to Mark White yesterday, who was, I think, pretty shattered from that journey up there and then back on Tuesday night. But I think, nonetheless, delighted with that victory and very much sort of another another landmark in the club's rise and in the club's history, really.
Yeah, and there were quite a few shocks there. I know Royston got quite convincingly beating Chester as well. And we discussed before about the way that the National League teams get by through to the later stages of the competition, and does that give them too much of an advantage? But we've certainly seen this year where the National League teams seem to be taking the competition as seriously as they should. But maybe it shows the closing gap between National South and also at Step 3 clubs, that there's still shocks at every round.
Yeah, quite possibly. It was a great win for Royston on Saturday against Chester. Of course, they had already beaten Wealdstone, who were top of National League South, and also Boreham Wood in that run. And now they'll be going to Ebbsfleet, aren't having the best of times in the National League, and Royston will certainly fancy sort of putting off another shock there. But yeah, I guess it does show that, that perhaps the gap's closing, and sort of on anyone's day, anyone can beat anyone. It's sort of cup football as well. And it's good to sort of see these sort of shocks and surprises, really. I think that's the second time we've had Royston on our front cover for another one of their shops.
Yeah, so a good weekend last weekend. As you say, groundsman, it's got to be a tough week for groundsman, because certainly the guys that I've spoken to, the pitches are so waterlogged that actually there's not a lot they can do. You could maybe try and help the drainage go down, but as soon as you go on with any sort of machinery, you're risking the future of the grass and damaging it and causing greater problems. But we also know that if there were any games played this week, I'm sure pitches wouldn't have held up as groundsmen would have liked as well. And maybe we should all give it at least a minute's applause to all the groundsmen on Saturday if we get these games on.
Yeah, tricky one. I sort of won't pretend to sort of know too much about how to maintain a pitch, but I think there's sort of other considerations of putting covers on pitches, but then does that sort of kill the grass pretty quickly, sort of suffocate it, and obviously it's not getting any light that way, and things like that. So it is difficult, and obviously sort of at this time of year you don't want to start falling behind on your fixtures. As we see on Tuesday night, a lot of those FA Trophy replays were postponed, which now means that they'll have to be played next Tuesday, and there's a knock-on effect from that, and clubs sort of falling behind. So it's a difficult time of year, really. We can only just sort of hope that the weather eases off a little bit, and at least sort of our Saturdays and 24 hours or so before that are somewhat dry, and pitchers can have a bit of time to recover, because after such a sort of grueling Christmas period where a lot of games get played on these pitches, they sort of take a battering, really, and suddenly when sort of the rain comes down, it doesn't sort of run off perhaps as easy as it might like.
Yeah, and interesting also that I saw a few of the artificial surfaces also called off, because the huge deluges that just came down, they just couldn't drain away quick enough to be able to play games of football on there.
Yeah, and the winds are another thing you've got to take into account. It can spoil many a game, really. And I think, obviously, with the sort of storms that have been coming in across the country, obviously that can play a major part as well. And, really, you just want to sort of make sure everything's sort of safe for these games to go ahead. And really, you do have to consider as well whether it's worth the risk of fans having to travel across the country to attend these games if it's going to come at a risk of them doing so.
Yeah, so if it's hard being a groundsman, it is always hard being a manager, isn't it? I mean, looking again, fairly quiet on the managerial merry-go-round this week, although I do see that Basildon United have appointed their fifth manager of the season in Alex Salmon. So maybe it, with the weather as it is, Salmon may be the way that they need to go. But a little bit sad to see Danny Chapman stepping down at Harlow, wanting to take a break from football. I think he's been there 16 years, 9 years as manager. I mean, you just don't get that in the modern era, you? 9 years as a manager with a football club. But some good news from King's Lynn Town this week.
Yeah, Ian Culverhouse has signed a new 2.5-year deal with the National League North Club, obviously, is in his second spell there, having initially got them into the Step 3 playoffs, where they lost to Slough, and then he left for Grantham, but sort of quickly returned to King's Lynn, and ever since he has it, there's been more success than there. Obviously, they managed to win through the Super Playoffs last season, which was a very hard task, eventually beating Warrington. And then this year, at step two, they just seem to have gone from strength to strength. And like I say, currently leading the division. Out of the trophy last weekend, which would have been a little disappointment for them. But otherwise, a completely flawless reign, really, to Ian Culverhouse's time there. And I'm sure... the club and supporters will be delighted that he signed that contract, which at least means it'll make it a little bit harder for him to be attracted to a different club. But no, that's great news. I mean, I've spoken to Adam Marriott a couple of months ago, who was saying how brilliant the training sessions were of an evening and the ideas that he had and the things they get him doing. So I think he's very, very highly rated by all accounts. And I guess good news for King's Lynn that he'll be staying put there.
Yeah, and good news for football as well, that a manager that's doing well gets recognised and supported by his club. Again, your contract is only as good as the reparations, if it all goes wrong, that you actually get out of the back of it. But hopefully there's going to be a lot of longevity there for Ian Culverhouse and the team at King's Lynn. Guess with the weekend ahead, is there anything else that we can look forward to in the non-league paper this weekend?
Yeah, well, we're sort of hoping that there's plenty of match reports to be had and to be coming in on Saturday evening. As we've been saying, hopefully the weather holds off. But otherwise, there's plenty more to read than just about the matches. We've sort of analysed the trophy and vase draws. So we've spoken to Royston, to Averley, who we didn't actually mention, who had a great great trophy run. We're also looking at the vase, Atherstone in there, Leighton, who had a sort of miraculous comeback. I spoke to Ashton Campbell, who scored sort of a 15-minute hat-trick, having come off the bench to win it for them, and Dorking as well. And there's plenty of other bits and pieces in there. We have sort of all the latest news. Jonathan North, sort of a Wealdstone hero, has sort of ended his time at the club after nearly 10 years. We hear from him. I spoke to Paul Cox, who... he's having a great time at Kettering Town since going in there. He went in just at the start of November when they were rock bottom of National League North, and since then they've only lost once in their last 10 league games under Paul Cox, who is really enjoying his time there. He was telling me how he thought after a sort of ill-fated spell at Guiseley that he wasn't sure whether he wanted a return to management. He'd sort of lost that sort of fire and love for it, but slowly but surely it sort of crept back, and now at Kettering he's really enjoying it. So that's sort of a nice story, really, to hear about sort of a manager who's sort of on the way out of football, but now is in fact totally in love with it again. So you can read that and plenty more in Sunday's paper.
Well, looking forward to all of it. Thanks again for joining us on the Non-League Show, David, and have a great weekend.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tim.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you to Dave for joining me. A big thank you to Simon too, and good luck in the future.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Well, it's thanks to all of our guests. A big thank you to everybody that listens. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anson is at DaveAnson78. Caroline Barker is at Caroline Barker. Myself at Tim Fuel.
What's your
Twitter?
Yeah.
SimonBass10.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, make sure you follow the man. See where where he is and what he's up to. You can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites, where you can also find the gaffer tapes, which may be slightly delayed for the next episode.
Yes, it's, I had an issue last week. I had to go to Belfast, so that cancelled. So we're a week behind, and Tim's slapped my wrists for it. But
Liam Neeson's gone missing.
There will be a new gaffer tape, but there are episodes for you to listen to. So if you've not listened to them yet, make sure you do check out.
And get Barney a job, because that would be a proper one.
So the non-league gaffer tapes and the non-league show on Audio Boom and every other podcast aggregation site. Thank you and goodbye.
JIBBA JABBA.